Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Hey everybody, on this episode of the Riverdale After Show, we're breaking down season 4, episode 9, chapter 66, Tangerine. 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 Ryan, are you activated? Let's do this.
I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
It's a Riverdale After Show. Betty's running for her life. Alice coming with a knife. Jughead goes to the woods. Archie beating up Hood. Cheryl says, goodbye, Jason. Setting you afire. Sending you down the river. Look at that, guys. Breaking it all down right now on the Riverdale After Show. Welcome, everyone. This, of course, is the show that looks back at all the craziness that's happening to everyone in living in Riverdale. Every Wednesday night, airing on the CW. I am your host, Frank Moran, and making me look good, and I need a lot of help, and sounding even better, is the one, the only, he always gets it done in one.
Except for today.
Except for today. Ryan, everybody.
Yes, this is Ryan in the booth, flaunting the old name tag extraordinaire.
Wait, are you official now? You're officially credentialed?
Official credential after many months.
Look at
for
you.
Riverdale, but so excited. And just a few shout-outs in the chat. I'll be checking out the chat the entire episode as we break down this episode of Riverdale. We got External Shockwave, Logan Knight, Fun Size 40. Good to see a Fun Size 40. And please comment away. Oh, they're all talking about Tangerine. I'll be there. Let's go, Frank.
That's right. Folks, you know what? Like us on Facebook. Give us those 5 stars on iTunes. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. And like Ryan said, hop in the chat. Share your thoughts. We appreciate you taking the time to jump in with the rest of the community and help us break down this crazy episode of Riverdale. Of course, this is the winter finale, so we're going to be off for a little bit. We won't be back until January 22nd. So this episode had to pack in plenty of content to give you stuff to kind of dissect and think about over this long winter holiday. And I know, Ryan, I was excited. I was able to share a viewing station with you for a little bit for this episode.
That's right. I did chime in. I did pop in because usually I'm watching it. Usually I'm binging the entire series on my old phone here. But I saw you sitting there, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to come in, put on the headphones, I got to catch the last few minutes. Got to see her say, here are my notes real quick. Let's see. So this says, Tangerine, remove dark part of self. I was like, oh, wow. She's removing the dark part of herself. 4 weeks later, time jump, dead guy Betty and holding rock, Jughead, and also the date of when it returns, which is January 22nd, 2020. Happy New Year.
Oh, dun, dun, dun. So, folks, the first thing I have to ask Ryan is, have you ever been hypnotized?
Once or twice, yes.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, both at proms.
Really?
It was after proms. Sorry, not during the prom. It was the after prom. I was hypnotized. They've got a hypnotist at the after prom, and they hypnotized me. There we go. Took a minute, but we got there.
So your junior and senior prom both hypnotized.
Oh, I was a sophomore.
Oh, somebody stepped in the game
me.
Up.
Yeah.
Well, and, of course you're a catch.
Oh, thank you. And they hired me, and he did the snap, and I was out.
Holy cow. Now, of course, you remember everything you did.
I remember some of what I did. It was like a blackout.
Oh.
Which you could say, I mean, if that counts as a hypnotize. Maybe I've done it a few more times than I originally thought.
They brought a hypnotist to our school in high school, and they did like a little assembly there in the gym, and asked for volunteers, and I was like, oh, hey, this would be cool to try to get hypnotized.
And then walk up, and everyone's like, oh, Frank's doing it.
Yeah, and it didn't work on me.
Oh.
But I pretended that it did.
Oh, you faked it.
I just faked it in there to go along with everything.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was bummed that it didn't work.
Darn.
Yeah. So
it does work on some people.
Oh, Tangerine.
Tangerine.
Tangerine. Tangerine.
Tangerine.
So the reason we're riffing on this, and I know you're chiming in about that on the chat, is
Betty is dealing with people that are being activated around her. We find out that Polly ended up hurting a nurse terribly at her institution that she's at. Almost tore her face off. Ryan, she almost tore her face off.
Yikes.
And Alice gets a phone call as well. And after she hangs up the phone, she just goes into a fugue state and walks right back into the kitchen, pulls out a knife, and then tries to kill Betty until Betty realizes, hey, hold on a second. Let me try to. You look like you're hypnotized. Let me just snap you out of it. Which, I'll give props for Betty. She, quick thinking. I don't know if I saw somebody that I loved advancing on me with a knife, acting all silent and creepy, if I would be able to think quickly enough to just snap my fingers as opposed to either running for my life or maybe trying to get something heavy and hit them with it.
Right.
Yeah. But she did it and finds out that, so hypnosis is involved and realizing, hey, this is the farm's stock and trade is hypnosis, and talks to Charles and finds out that these phone calls that have been happening both to Polly at the institution as well as to Alice at the house have been coming from Shankshaw Prison Penitentiary, which I do like Shankshaw. A nice nod to Shawshank.
I like that.
Yes.
I like that.
And who happens to be residing in that prison?
Morgan Freeman.
Yes. He's back in. It didn't take. They found
him.
They found him down in Mexico and dragged him back.
He sailed back there. Good to see him.
He couldn't stand the outside world. He needed to come back in.
Andy Dufresne.
There you go.
Dug his way back in.
Crawled back in through that, that poster and was like, hey, I was here the whole time. What are you guys talking about? So anyway, she
goes. We kid.
We kid.
We kid.
Because we love. She goes and talks to Evelyn there in Shankshaw and finds out that, hey, you know what we did? Because Edgar thought it'd be cool is that we basically took everybody at the farm and we hypnotized them and. Upon activating them with the code word, saying tangerine three times quickly, it makes them think that they are Betty, and they want to then kill the dark version of Betty. Because Edgar thought that would be fun. So, you know how that is, Brian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hypnosis should be fun like that. Just turn people into just murdering time bombs.
Hypnosis can be dangerous. I mean, there's a lot of, there's the old saying about, I don't know if you've any Marvel fans here, but the Winter Soldier was triggered by some words from Russia.
That's true.
One of them might have been tangerine. We actually have some people in the chat chiming in if they've ever been hypnotized. We got External Shockwave saying, I haven't been hypnotized, but I'm open to it. I actually added the open to it. He might not be. Fun size 40, never been hypnotized. Also, they want to see if it's real. That's actually what External Shockwave is saying. Fun size 40 never wants to do it, which, hey, it's not everyone's cup of tea. All right. Some people like to be in control in the driver's seat, but a few of us also like to be in the passenger. A few other people saying, yes, Alice was channeling her inner. Her inner hood. Someone just said Hail Hydro. Yes, hypnotizing. Got the Marvel fans in
there. Right.
But let us know if you've been hypnotized.
Yeah, that's but I've always heard about hypnotism though, is that you can't be hypnotized to do something that you wouldn't ordinarily do.
Right.
So I feel like it's just a nice TV plot to hypnotize you into being a murderer. I don't know if in real life they could just take you regular plain old Ryan, hypnotize you and turn you into not only Betty seeking at us up, but Jughead as well this episode. And after the bombshell that we had a few weeks back where we saw that Ryan's in the booth, that Charles is in league with Chick while in prison there, we haven't really seen more of what Charles's agenda is. I mean, clearly it seems like some sort of payback that he wants to get revenge, whether it's on Alice and Betty, just Betty, the whole Cooper family in total, we don't know yet. I don't know if FP and Jughead figure into that revenge, if that's even part of Charles's agenda. So we haven't seen much more in that. And so this episode, I was unsure about Charles's motives helping Betty, trying to figure out, hey, are you indeed a ticking time bomb? If that's the case, we could say tangerine three times right here in the office. It's a controlled environment. If you go crazy, it's easy to keep you contained. And he does say tangerine to Betty three times. Nothing happens. So he goes, all right, you're good. But when Betty walks home and sees the red door of the house, she says she goes into a fugue state and sees her as a young kid who is about to go kill Caramel, her cat. And talking later with Charles, he says, hey, maybe if you go back into this fugue state and convince yourself as a child not to kill Caramel, then you've basically killed the dark side of yourself, which... that seemed like a bunch of mumbo jumbo to me. I don't know about like going back into a memory, changing the memory from doing an action that kind of broke you, for want of a better word, and stopping that would then all of a sudden just eliminate that in your life? I don't know. It doesn't seem really feasible to me. But she tries it, stops Betty, and it seems so easy. She just walked out of the house, saw young Betty about to pick up a rock and kill Caramel the cat, just takes it away from her and says, hey, just go out and play. Hey, I guess that was it. I'm all done. And by the end of the episode, she does the Candyman thing, where she looks into a mirror, Ryan, and she says Tangerine three times.
Three times. It's also the Beetlejuice thing.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And before we get to the third one, we cut downstairs to Alice, who hears a breaking of glass, runs up to Betty's bedroom, and looks, and as Betty's like, oh, I was just making sure the dark part of me is really gone. And we notice that the mirror shattered, which, if it was really gone, why would you shatter the mirror? So clearly, there's something up with Betty. So whether she is unknowingly just kind of, just hypnotized herself, enabled herself, activated herself with the help of either Evelyn or Charles, or she just did it on her own, I guess we'll figure out for the when we come back in the winter to pick up the rest of the season. Have you ever gone into like a bedroom or a bathroom with a mirror and ever said Candyman three times?
I was dared to do it in high school. It was a high school restroom, and it was one of those like weird high school things where we sleep over. It's like a camping thing.
Oh, at the school?
At the school, yeah.
Interesting.
Actually, might have been middle school, but we did it there, and surprise, nothing happened.
The story would have been great. I was like, surprise, he did come.
He jumped out.
There was a terrible tragedy at my school that night.
Yikes. No, it was called Riverdale. No. I think it's funny to do all those games and just like look in the mirror and say like Candyman three times or Beetlejuice, or there's a few other ones I'm forgetting right now, but there's the three times. I'm going to look them up, but I'll report back.
Yes, please do. Folks, if you ever did any of those kind of, I don't want to say childhood superstitions.
Bloody Mary.
Yes. Bloody Mary, Bloody Mary. I'm going to hold off. But if you ever did any of that and had any great results, either positive or negative, why, great. Tell us about your negative results if you said Bloody Mary three times. We want to know. But chime in the chat. So, I mentioned Jughead also reaching out to Charles, and the reason that he's doing that is because right at the top of the episode, we open up the show with Jughead reading his version of the Baxter Brothers story, and DuPont right there saying, hey, guess what? Hands down right now, you are the best one out of the other four students that are in here. I'm giving you the contract. And in one sense, it was like, all right, but it seemed like there was such a buildup about, is Jughead, is he going to write this? Is he going to wrestle with it? What's he going to do? That to come to this episode and it was just like, oh, nope, I've already written it and I'm just going to read it out loud and then just easily get this contract. It seemed like, oh, all right, we're just moving fast forward on this in the storyline, which given DuPont's, certainly Jughead did no favors by accusing DuPont of stealing the story from his grandfather, the Baxter Boys. DuPont didn't think very highly of Jughead. But after reading the story, clearly he blew away everybody else in the room, and he offers him the contract for the Baxter Boys, as long as he can play by the rules, whatever those might be. We're left to figure that out, and I'm sure as the season begins back in January. Resumes back in January. We'll find out more of what these rules are. But before Jughead wants to sign the contract, he's got to know for sure what happened between DuPont and his grandfather. And he asks Charles if he can help him find his grandfather. And surprisingly enough, Forsythe the First, very easy to find. He's in this town called Seaside. He's living like in a trailer. He heads over there and chats with them and finds out that everything's not what he thought, that his grandfather didn't have the story stole from him. He wrote the Baxter Boys story, but he was getting burnt out at Stonewall Prep, and he was going to leave. But DuPont read it and really liked it and offered to buy the story from Forsythe the First and for $5,000. Forsythe knew that he was leaving. He's like, hey, all right, yeah, I'll sell it for $5,000, which, I think there's a lot of people in their youth that will, for whatever reason, are have some kind of talent that they maybe feel burnt out on or for whatever's happening in their life, they decide to walk away and they just sell.
You're trying to tell us something, Frank?
Yeah, I'm trying to sell you guys. I tell you this dark secret. But he sells this thing. I mean, I'm thinking without realizing what a great property that he had in his hands. Thinking like
The Descendants.
Like The Descendants, but I'm thinking also like the creators of Superman, Siegel and Shuster. They created Superman, and then they didn't quite know. I mean, they knew that their property was good, but not how good. And so when they sold it to DC, they ended up making, you know, untold millions of dollars off that property in the span of these 80 years that he's been around. But when you realize like the paltry sum somebody sold it for, and then the millions that it ends up going to make. It's the same thing here with Forsythe the First, when he realizes that for $5,000, which seemed great at the time, if he had been able to just hold on to that story and sell it himself, the untold millions that would have come into his life. I guess I can sour a person. Ryan, have you ever passed up on an opportunity that that ended up paying off big time for someone else that could have been yours?
On an opportunity? I have had a few scenarios. Let's see. So, okay, here's one. So I interned in New York for like 9 months on a few shows, not to name drop, but one of them was Dr. Oz. And it was cool. And I had an opportunity to intern at another place called The Chew, which was cool. And then that spun off into another opportunity. But again, it was in college and I'd already interned a few semesters and they were like, wow, well, there's a few late night shows that I had an interview with potentially with Jimmy Fallon. They're like, I can get you this interview. And I could have done it. However, it wouldn't have worked out with my college schedule and I wanted to graduate on time. So I decided to decline the interview, even though the friend who was getting me the opportunity worked there and it was like almost a sure thing. I was like, I don't want to do it because I know it's going to set me back and I know it's going to make me like stay in school for another semester. So I don't know about the payoff there, but that is definitely one.
Interesting. I mean, certainly, you've got to move forward with your life and just, there's no sense in looking back. But do you see that as perhaps an opportunity that missed it now in retrospect?
Opportunity. I mean, are you asking about like regret, Frank?
I hate to like weigh that, to put that on you. I mean,
it's fine. I actually don't think I regret it because I feel like I'd already had that experience and I decided to do stuff here in LA. So I don't regret it. However, that was definitely like a big thing. That was like, oh, I had to make a decision.
I mean, you could be hosting your own late night talk show right now.
I don't think so. No? That one's doing pretty well.
He's not going to be around forever, though, right?
I mean, I think he's got another like 5 or 6, maybe 7 years. I think he really does.
Just seven. You don't want to see Late Night, The Tonight Show with Ryan Nelson? You don't want to see that?
I think that would be something a lot of people are interested in, but you got to pay your dues first.
All right.
And maybe we'll get Frank Moran in there.
Oh, my gosh. I would just be like the comic bit character that would show up.
The Higgins.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know if you watch.
Hey, I'll just be there behind my little podium. There you go.
And we'll be doing our bits.
Doing bits.
Thank you
doing
notes.
Doing bits.
And speaking of thank you notes, Frank, I want to just thank all the live viewers right now. Just a few shout outs, as always. Again, External Shockwave. We got Mercenary X84.
Yes.
X84. Please comment just the reasoning behind that name because it's a pretty cool name. Logan Knight, here as always, salute. Fun Size 40, like we were saying earlier. Good to see you, Fun Size 40. And yeah, guys, keep commenting away. Please hit that like button. We appreciate you here each and every week.
I admit, Mercenary X84 makes it sound like it's like some sort of X-Men character.
Yeah, it does. Maybe the X-Force.
Yeah, hanging out with Logan in the Weapon X program. I don't know. But, folks, Ryan gave a big thank you to everybody hopping in the chat. But I'm also just going to send even a bigger thank you for everybody that's either watching us live right now, joining in on the chat, or if you're listening later tomorrow, a couple days from now, you're whether on the computer or you're listening as a podcast. Thanks for taking time to listen. You've given us the opportunity to create these great shows for you to listen to and get in the conversation with us. Really appreciate that. I know Ryan and myself, we wouldn't be able to have as much fun as we're having right now if it wasn't for you letting us do this for you. So
absolutely,
thanks for making this happen. And as always, if you get a chance to like us on Facebook, subscribe to the YouTube channel, give us 5 stars on iTunes, wherever it is, just get involved in the conversation, share your thoughts. And again, a big thanks for helping us become the ESPN of TV talk.
Ding.
Ding. Basically, we end the episode with Jughead deciding to sign the contract, and he gets initiated into the Quill and Skull Club over at Stonewall Prep. And the initiation for that is you get a little letter that's a little note that's slid underneath your door tells you to go out into the woods ASAP. You go out. There's some torches lit up. The members of the club come out. They give you a rock. You immediately think that they're there to kill you, but they're not. It's an initiation. There's a skull placed on a tree stump. You shatter the skull, and inside is your key, signifying your membership into the Quill and Skull Club. Did you ever join any clubs with an initiation?
I did have a few clubs, Frank.
Oh, nice.
I was on Heifer International, which is a pretty popular high school club across the board in the East Coast. Basically, you raise money all year long so that you can send a cow to a farmer on another continent, typically Europe or Asia, and occasionally Africa. And then that cow will provide milk and money to that farmer for the rest of their year. It could really change their life. It's a pretty interesting club. How about you, Frank?
Yeah, I never really was much of a club goer. I never joined a secret society. I never had like a really cool initiation to end anything. I was never a member of a fraternity or anything like that. So
we always see you in the club.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's but there's no initiation in to get in the club. It's just a cover.
That's right.
Yeah, so it's, I feel like, oh, all right, I'm not anything special, but. Life is not over for either of us, Ryan. There's still time for us to be inducted into a secret society.
There is tons of time. And
absolutely.
I would love to be in the one that was in glass, just where people leave a restaurant and you get silent. That's the type
yes.
of society I want to be in.
But do you want to do that? Because your objective then is to destroy people of exceptional abilities.
You know what? You're right. I changed my mind. I want to be in a Riverdale club. With everyone here in this chat.
That's right. All right. Folks, yeah. If we were to make a secret society, what would the initiation be? What would you want Ryan and I do to initiate you into the Riverdale AfterBuzz Society? Oh, I'm excited to hear what they say in the
chat.
Love it. The one thing that Jughead does try to do before he ends up signing the contract, though, is he tries to get a reunion between FP and his grandfather. Because his grandfather knows that once he realized... how popular the Baxter Boys books were and how much millions that they generated. He did get mad at the world, drank heavily, treated FP and his wife horribly before he ended up just leaving. And he knows he did wrong by FP. And when Jughead tells FP that he went and saw him and says, hey, if I got him and brought him here, would you be willing to talk to him? Because he knows he did wrong by you. FP says, all right, I'll talk with him. And when Jughead goes to find his grandfather is ghosted again. Whether it was by his own accord or something else happening, we don't know. But certainly, I mean, Jughead's FP the First has certainly stayed hidden for this long. So I tend to think that he probably ended up getting freaked out and decided to take off. So whether we see... I figure this can't be the only time that we're going to see him this season. I feel like we got to see the grandfather come back at some point. Only because we made such a point of trying to have a reunion between FP and his father that I feel that some way, somewhere along the season, there will be that reunion between FP and his father. Whether we get to see a lot of it or just they end up talking a lot off camera and we just see the aftermath of that. But I feel like that is going to come later on in the season.
I agree.
Nah, thanks, Ryan. I appreciate that. So we also have, I think, probably the dopiest storyline that we've got going on this episode. If I was in my power ranking, this is going in at number 5. And this is Cheryl's storyline, where she realizes this and she's being gaslighted. And we've talked about that, Ryan, by being gaslit.
Oh, we've talked about the gaslighting.
Ryan, I would think, like, if you were trying to figure out if somebody was gaslighting you and you wanted to make sure you got that person, would your move be to light a bunch of bug bombs in your home in the idea that you could actually knock that person out while you slipped on a gas mask?
Definitely.
Then there you go.
That would definitely be my move.
All right.
I would go to the nearest, let's see, what store? I would go to the nearest insect fight store.
Yep.
Get all the bug bombs I need. I would put them in their room, put on the gas mask, and laugh.
Well, Cheryl ends up doing that. She sets up the scene great. She makes it seem like she gets Jason's dead body. She gets Julian the doll next to her. Makes a big thing that, hey, I'm releasing all these bug bombs, and I'm going to poison myself, and put myself out of this life. That's it. I'm finally done. And it ends up being that Penelope has been hiding inside the walls of Thistle House. And when the bug bonds go off and it gets too much, she comes out of the wall finally, while Cheryl's just wearing the gas mask and going, all right, finally. And what she does is she puts her mom on trial for all the terrible things, for treating her horribly throughout her life, for almost killing Betty, Archie, Jughead, and Veronica, for killing her father, her uncle, for being part of the death of Hal Cooper. And puts her on trial and finds her guilty because Penelope's like, well, whatever, what are you going to do? You're going to take me to the authorities? And Cheryl says, no, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put you somewhere that's so vile that you will wish that you were just living in the walls of this house. Sounds great to deal that sort of that parental justice. It's so crazy. But what she does is she ends up taking Penelope down to the bunker, that terrible, awful bunker that we saw so much last season, where everybody played griffins and gargoyles. And it looks like that's now going to be Penelope's prison cell for the foreseeable future, while she just thinks about all the mistakes that she's made in her life. I really don't know what the long-term play for this storyline is. I mean, that great. Penelope's around, and now she's caged up in the bunker. Great. I mean, the bunker's been places where Tall Boy, he was, like, killed in there and then left to rot in there for a few days until he could figure out how to dispose of the body. Crazy things happen in the bunker. All right, great. I guess that's where we're going to put Penelope on. I have to admit, I had pretty much forgotten the bunker set. Until Penelope woke up and realized that that's where she was. I'm like, oh, yeah. This is a set we spent a lot of time in last season. Which, I mean, I guess if the production has spent that much time building it, they may as well get their money's worth and use it as much as they can in this further season. So I have to admit, I'm in no rush to see any more with Penelope. But the nice thing about it, though, is that after she puts Penelope away in the bunker, she's sitting there with Tony and realizes, hey, maybe it's now time to bury Jason for real. Because one of the reasons that Penelope was so mad at Cheryl and wanted revenge and why she was doing all this gaslighting to her is that she saw how happy that she was with Jason, that she had this opportunity to be happy with him, something that Penelope was forever denied. And so didn't want Cheryl to be able to have that happiness that she couldn't have herself. But Cheryl now realizes that, hey, maybe it's time to give Jason the peace that he never got to have in life and that I never got to have thanks to my mom. And what she does is that she gets everybody around that was with her at the river when she tried to kill herself in the winter, first season, and decides it's time to send Jason off to the great beyond and does it as a Viking funeral. Jason, Ryan, when it's time to go, do you want to be sent off in a Viking funeral?
I'd like to be sent out on a Viking funeral with every iTunes review I've gotten. And speaking of iTunes reviews, I just wanted to give a few shout-outs to some people who have given us some iTunes reviews, or especially Frank. I mean, shout-out to Frank, who's just helming the ship each and every week, crushing it on the Riverdale After Show.
Oh, my word, guys. Thank you.
Solo showing it. I am just I am Santa's helper in the booth here. Never seen a frame of the show other than today. But we got first up from a Stephanie. Great coverage, 5 stars. Shout out to Stephanie. Next one from Shell Thief. Frank is great.
Wow.
But.
Uh-oh. Lay it on me.
But he needs some people to talk to. Producer Ryan does not seem to know much about the show. And you know what? Fair point.
Fair Vito, point. Vito chiming in on that one. He agreed.
Yes. And I mean, hey, you're absolutely right. But we appreciate the iTunes review. And all you listening, if you give an iTunes review, we will read it on air.
That's right. That is right. I do like, though, that, Ryan, that your request would be, hey,
no before Viking
you send me
funeral.
Yeah, before you send me off on that Viking funeral, make sure you print out all my iTunes reviews.
This is what I want. I'm going to be buried on a okay, so first off.
All right.
My corpse.
Yes.
I'm going to be on a lifeboat.
Got it.
You push it, mm-hmm. And around me, instead of, like, of leaves, it's going to be printouts of my iTunes reviews.
And that's what we just light
and
up.
And then you shoot a flaming arrow.
Yes.
You just shoot it. And you just see it go. And then I just burst into flames. Fall off a waterfall. I go off a waterfall.
Perfect. I would love that. I hope that I'm on shore watching that happen. And I'll say, you know what? This is how he always wanted to go. I know that for a fact.
You'll be on shore nodding like, yes, that's how he wanted to do it.
This is it. This is it. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. What I do like is that you can tell that that fire was done in post-production using CGI, right? Because once Cheryl lights it, I do like that she just lights it as she's on the boat, on the shore, then just walks away, and it's up for Archie and Jughead to push the boat into the water so it can sail down the river. But the flames on that boat are starting to get really huge, and there's no way that Archie and Jughead are getting that close to those flames without feeling like, oh, all right, this is hot. This is really hot. So I did like that. That is like, they just walked up there really casually, like, yeah, all right. This is kind of like a little mini inferno at the beginning of this boat where we have to push it off the shore. No big deal. Like, I don't know why they didn't, like, light the far end so that you could easily push it off and not have to worry about, like, the intense flames right in your face as you're trying to push it into the water.
It's a fire hazard.
It is.
For
like,
sure.
It's going to be three people going on this Viking funeral.
Funny enough, we have people in the chat sharing how they would like to have their Viking funeral.
Oh, all right.
So I'm just going to read a few off. Billy Jean Girl, 24, joining the chat. Shout out to Billy Jean Girl here each and every week. Let's see. We got, okay, external shockwave. First they said, I can't see Tangerine in a supermarket ever again. I can't hear the song ever again. So it just goes to show what media like this can do to your everyday life. External shockwave saying that's a proper funeral, Ryan. Thank you. They didn't bury, they burned him. They want to be, okay, external shockwave wants to be sent off like Thor's mother in Thor Dark World, which I believe was a similar thing.
Yes.
With the flaming arrow and everything.
And you turn into, like, stardust as you go over the waterfall. The boat continues to sail, and then you just sprinkle into stardust.
And I might be wrong, but I also think that's how Yondu in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 went as well. So it's a pretty interesting ritual of the Viking funeral. We got a lot of other people saying, I'm glad Jason had a proper funeral, regardless of them burning him, since he deserved to have one.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. He'd been sitting around Thistle House in that wheelchair with his mouth all agape for the longest time. No way for a body to get any sort of eternal rest. So, yeah, if you're going to go out in a blaze of glory, which is what he did. But again, in my power rankings, that's taking fifth spot for the worst storyline of the week here. Now, we've got Veronica this episode. She's dealing with Hiram, and this storyline didn't do much for me either, because what I thought was really interesting last week with Veronica realizing that she needs to get out of this death spiral that she's in with Hiram. And again, for as much as that the school counselor was saying, hey, you know, you still live at home, you still answer to whenever dad you know, says call, he comes and says, hey, get over here. She's still living at home. She always tells Hiram all her plans so that Hiram can then just sabotage her every time. And then she can be all frustrated, like, oh, look what he's doing now. Like, well, why did you tell him all your plans and let him sabotage? If you want to start your own rum business, start your own rum business and then put him out of business. Don't tell him that that's what you're going to do. So that way he can just have all this time to put the kibosh on you. So even though Veronica gets her little digs in by going to her grandmother, telling her everything that Hiram's done to her, and then basically all that culminates in is that she gets the rum recipe from her, and then gets grandmother to go and visit Hiram and give him a slap for everything that she's been doing to Veronica, it doesn't turn out to be anything, because Hiram has patented the recipe for the rum, so Veronica can't do anything with that rum recipe. He also, since Veronica decided not to go to Harvard, has then been putting all the kibosh on, you know, Veronica's other schools that she's interested in. Dartmouth, all of a sudden, they don't want Veronica attending there. That was her backup school. And now Columbia is in the mix. And Hiram decides, hey, you know what? If Veronica is going to close down the speakeasy because as the mayor, I'm getting rid of her liquor license, and she's going to throw a big blowout party, why don't I invite the somebody from Columbia, the admissions board, to come in and see all this in action and see young underage Veronica Luna do a big blowout celebration at her club. And so that's what she does. And Hiram's sure that's going to tank her chances of getting into Columbia. I mean, at the very least, it doesn't tank it. Veronica does a little song and dance of Saturday Night and then talks to the admissions person and says, hey, you know what? you're not tanked. We at Columbia like people with great stories, and I feel like you have a great one to tell, so tell me your story. So it feels like the book's not closed on Veronica going to Columbia, but I really hope that Veronica stops telling Hiram all her plans, because what's the point? I mean, Ryan, if you, I know you've got plans brewing, and but you keep play your cards close to the vest. You're not telling anybody everything you're doing to try to destroy somebody else, are you?
Oh, not at all. I'm being very secretive.
Yeah. I mean, I know you've got plans to take me out in some way to
How'd
minimize
you know?
Me. Yes, but you're not telling me, and I respect that.
But yet you found out.
Well, I don't, but see, I know they're there, but I don't know what they are. So I have to just start making guesses. And I might be right, I might be wrong. I mean, you know, if you don't see me come January, you know, 20th here. January 22nd. If you don't see me, if you don't see me January 22nd,
2020.
Then you know Ryan succeeded.
So keep an eye out for January 22nd to see if Frank made it.
Oh, I don't know. So that right there, I'm going to put that at number four. Not as bad as Cheryl's, but still not great. Our last storyline of the week here is Archie. We see him still struggling what to do with Dodger. Some of the kids decided to try to find Dodger, and they end up getting beat up. The best thing that I liked about this episode, though, was seeing Archie and FP work together, because I've been frustrated that FP seemed to be very ineffective as the Riverdale sheriff in trying to put the Dodger and his family out of business. And this time, FP comes to lend a great hand. He ends up putting a metal detector in at the youth center. He puts security cameras around the building. And when Archie does find out that these kids were beaten up, FP says, hey, you know what? I will help you take these guys down. But after this, you've got to step away from the vigilante thing. Your father would beat the tar out of me if he knew you're doing it. So I will help you, but you got to say goodbye to that. And Archie agrees. They take down the Dickinsons. But what do you know? Before they leave town, Dodger ends up waking up, getting out of his coma that he was in, and comes to Pop's Chocolate Shop and shoots FP. A little flesh wound. But you got to figure Archie's triggered, because that's what happened with his father. Fred was shot at Pops and almost died. FP's now shot. And Archie loses it and finds Dodger. They get into a big brawl. He beats the snot out of him, says, hey, get out of this town. If you ever come back, I'm going to kill you. And some of the kids from the center watch him do this. And you feel like he's lost his way. He's never felt farther from his father right now. He's perhaps alienated some of the kids. They've seen him super angry and violent, covered with blood. And who at the end of the episode comes to perhaps save the day? Is Fred's brother Frank has come to town, and we're going to find out what his agenda is in town when we return on January 22nd. Who knows what it might be, Ryan? Who knows what it might be?
We'll find out, right?
Can't wait. Until then, folks, you know what? Thanks for joining us all the season so far. Have the merriest of holidays. We're going to be taking a holiday break here. I know Ryan's got big plans. Some of them may spell doom for me. Again, the only way to know is to tune back in January 22nd. Oh, that's a maniacal laugh.
Right.
Uh-oh. So, folks, we'll be back here Wednesday night, January 22nd, resuming our coverage of the Riverdale episodes and continuing it out for the rest of the season. Ryan, if they want to find out what you're doing, what your plans are for me or anything else you might have in store over the long winter's break, where's the best place to find you?
Well, you can find me at Ryan Nilsson on Twitter, R-Y-N-I-L-S-C-N, at Ryan Nilsson _ on Instagram. You can also see me and Steph Sabra, another producer and amazing host here, tomorrow, Thursdays, 4 p.m. on the Popcorn Talk Network, our sister channel, and every Friday at noon for the Mandalorian After Show. Chime in. Frank, where can they find you?
Find me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie. Folks, again, happy holidays. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back here January 22nd right here on AfterBuzz TV.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.